The home box office series, The Sopranos, was on TV for 8 seasons. And it followed the ups and downs and the life of one Tony Soprano and his family and all the people who interacted with him, a mobster in New Jersey. And during the last season of The Sopranos, many of the characters were being killed off. Many of the mobsters, gang members, and others as well. It seemed like each week somebody was being assassinated, sometimes in some very surprising ways. Now, the viewers, the regular viewers of the series, just knew that Tony Soprano was ordering a lot of these killings. They also knew very well that there were people out to get Tony Soprano. And the last episode, everybody knew, was coming up. And they were wondering, how is this thing going to end? Would somebody shoot Tony or one of his family members, his wife, his daughter, his son? Tense, very tense. In the last scene, especially, the tension is very high. You just know that something is going to happen. Tony is meeting his wife and his son and his daughter at a local restaurant, crowded restaurant. There are a lot of people there. Tony's at the booth first, then his wife comes in, then his son comes in, and then his daughter is outside trying to park the car. As the camera pans around the restaurant, we're wondering, is somebody getting ready to pull a gun and do something? Well, let's see what happens. Now, the dialogue here is not as important as the action and the movements of the people nearby. But how does the story of Tony Soprano end? That's it. That's how it ends. You have these high expectations, all this tension, and all of a sudden, the screen goes blank. There's no music. Nothing else is said. It just went blank. Viewers were very surprised. I remember going, ah! And then, when I saw that's how they planned to do it, I just started laughing. Do you know that the father of the producer of the show was absolutely convinced that his cable had cut off? And he called the cable company and said, "Hey, you cut me off." It took him about 3 days for them to convince him that his son, the producer, meant to end the story that way. He just left us wondering what happened or what didn't happen to Tony Soprano. Now, there was a lot of discussion in the media days afterwards, after this was ended like this. Many viewers just thought it was a terrible ending. My son-in-law, Jason, just thought it was awful. But Jason's father and I both had the same opinion. And we both said we thought it was a great ending. Why? We both gave the same reason. Life is like that, right? As older guys, we know that many things aren't totally resolved and they rarely come to decisive conclusions, you know? Now, fairy tales and most TV shows end up in a neat little bundle, right? How do fairy tales end? And they lived happily ever after. Oh, isn't that sweet? But life isn't always like that. Things are often just left in the dark, and you don't know. Barrett, young man, was a new pastor preaching his first sermon. He was not only preaching to his new church, he was also preaching to his mother-in-law, who was named Mary. Now, Mary was a woman of few words, as they say. She could be rather blunt, a blunt individual, blunt as she could be. And after the service, during Sunday dinner, when they were sitting around having lunch, Barrett asked his mother-in-law what she thought of the sermon. And Mary replied. She said, "Well, I thought you had a good sermon. In fact, I thought you had a number of good sermons. And in fact, I thought you missed about 3 good stopping places in your sermon." Only a mother-in-law could do that, right? But you know, one of the tough challenges that a preacher faces is to know how to end a sermon. It takes guts just to stand up and start and to begin, but it's also very hard to know how to end one. And you know why? Because we like our endings to be tied up in neat little bundles. We like to have this final fitting conclusion to say, you know, the end. But the trouble is, so many stories in the Bible are open-ended, aren't they? Take the stories that Jesus told, the story of the prodigal son. You know, he goes away and he comes back and he's received very nicely, but there's an argument that takes place with the elder brother and they're at odds with one another. It's a trouble and tragic and tension. But what happened? Did the family ever pull it back together? Did the brothers reconcile? We're not told. What about that guy that was on the road from Jerusalem to Jericho, got beat up, and the Good Samaritan came along and took care of him? Whatever happened to that guy? Did he live? Did he make it? Jesus never said. So not everything has satisfying answers, completions, or final endings. Another thing, preachers don't usually want the congregation to have such a good ending that they say to themselves, "Oh, we're done with that spiritual moment now, and for the week we can just go on, move on, think about other things." See, preachers don't want that to happen. We want the sermon to continue. We want there to be bearing fruit in your lives. We want you to be dealing with it, thinking about it, keep going over it, you know. Don't ever be done with it, okay? Steve Carlton was a real fine fellow. He was our associate pastor of the church I served in Danville. And I would have Steve preach regularly, whether I was there or not. At least every other month, Steve would have an opportunity to develop his sharing of God's word on Sunday morning. And after one particular sermon, I remember I just had to give Steve some feedback about his message. And I had to tell him about his conclusion. The end of it, the invitation, it just kept going and going and going, as if he didn't know how to finish or he was reluctant to finish. And I said, "Steve, you keep circling the field and circling the field. Come on, buddy, land that plane, please." It would make your whole message a whole lot more effective. Now, curiously enough, the gospel writers seem to have hard time finishing up their Gospels and knowing how to end it with the events of Easter, or maybe because of the events of Easter and the resurrection. They have a real tough time ending their Gospels. Do you know where Mark ended his Gospel? Chapter 16, His gospel ended at verse 8. Read your notes in your Bible, and you say that the earliest manuscript have it stopping at verse 8. And what is it? Verse 8 says, "The women come and find the tomb empty, and they go away trembling with fear, and they don't tell anybody because they're afraid." That's it. That's the end of the story. A very similar ending to what they did with the Sopranos. It just cut off, and the reader is left wondering, what? What happened? What after this? What took place? That bothered somebody so much that they took a summary of what they knew from other Gospels, and they wrote a little piece, and they attached it to the book of Mark. And they said, well, he just had to tell them about the resurrection. He just had to tell them about Jesus showing up again. But that's not how Mark ended his gospel. He ended it the same way this TV producer did. He just said, that's what you get. After thinking about it a whole lot, I like Mark's ending because it's suspenseful. It's challenging. It hands it over to the reader. And the reader's wondering, what about the rest of the story? What happened after that? Now, Matthew does tell us more than Mark does at the end of his gospel. He has the risen Christ appearing to the disciples. And what does he say in Matthew? He just gives them this little command. Go therefore, make disciples. Hey, don't stand around looking at me. Get out there. Go on. Make disciples. That's how Matthew ends his gospel. How about Luke? How does he end his gospel? Well, he adds a little bit more, but you know what Luke did? He said, man, there's a whole lot more to the story about them going out into the world. I need to write another whole book. And you know what he wrote, right? He wrote the book of Acts. He had such a long story to tell, he couldn't finish it in one book. He had to write another one. He just kept going and going and going. And then the ending of the Gospel of John, as one Bible scholar said, his name is O. Wesley Allen, he said, he notes that the Gospel of John seems to have trouble ending. After the resurrection, Sylvia read it for us this morning, chapter 21 was added there too. The next scene, the disciples are back to work, aren't they? Doing what they know how to do best, doing what they did before they met Jesus. And what was that? Fishing. Fishing. They're back in their familiar workaday routine. This is what people often do when they've suffered a great trauma, don't they? You know, some kind of grief, some kind of loss, some kind of real problem. They drop back and punt. They drop back to what they know and understand. When you've dealt with the death of a close loved one, there are some very well-meaning friends who will tell you to do what? Stay busy, okay? Yeah, go back to work. It'll help you. It'll help you get through. It'll help you get over it, as if you ever get over it, which you don't. And many people have told me that's how they dealt with their grief. They say, as long as I'm working, as long as I'm staying busy, I can cope. But when I stop, oh boy, it's so hard. Perhaps this is what the disciples of Jesus were doing. Perhaps they said, oh man, losing him was so hard, and I don't get all this resurrection stuff. What does Peter say? Hey guys, I'm going fishing. They say, okay, we'll go with you. He goes back to the familiar and the routine. But as Sylvia read this morning from John 21, does Jesus leave him there? Does he let him go back to fishing? No, the risen Christ shows up. And in his showing up, he says, hey Peter, come on, what are you doing going back here to fishing? I called you away from fishing for fish to fishing for men. Do you remember that? Okay, Peter, it's not over. It has just started for you. Do you love me? Well, get out there and feed my sheep. That's what I want you to do. And then in this passage here, he says something very interesting to Peter. He says, follow me. Hello? That's the very thing, first thing he said to Peter when he met him at the beginning of the gospel. Follow me. Here he is at the end saying, follow me. Son, it ain't over. It's just started. But it's not easy starting over. Maybe we refuse to start over until something pushes us to do it into the next chapter. Peter was quite content to stick to the old chapter, hunched in his boat, pulling on his nets, and yet the risen Christ pulls him, pushes him, calls him, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't matter. He says, no, no, discipleship, the story's not over. Come on, Peter, let's go. You know, Reynolds Price wrote a book, and that book has touched many people's lives. The book is entitled A Whole New Life, because that's exactly what he describes in his book. He describes a whole new life for Reynolds Price. It's his account of having cancer. It's his account of having surgery. It's his account of ending up paralyzed from the waist down and being confined to a wheelchair. Now, it could have been the story, the end of his life. I think if I were in his situation, I might have said, hey, my life is over. But Reynolds Price took a much different approach. He learned not to be confined to his wheelchair. He learned not to be confined in any way, for that matter. He started over. He wrote some of the best fiction he'd ever written after this happened to him. And Reynolds says in the book that one of the biggest mistakes we make when we're slammed by some great trauma or tragedy, the mistake we make is to think that we can just kind of brush ourselves off and go on living the life that we lived before. And he says, from experience, you can't do that. You can only hope to say, the old me has died, there must be a new me to be reinvented. Peter had to go back into the world, but it was a world where the risen Christ was loose, and there was now the possibility of surprise and newness. It's a world full of danger that Peter's stepping out to from here on out, having met the risen Christ on the sea of, beside the Sea of Galilee. A dangerous world, more dangerous than it was before. Oh, Peter knew how dangerous it was. That's why he was so scared, and that's why he denied Christ, because he knew he was in danger. But now it would be even more dangerous. But Peter was willing to launch out into it. You know what happened to Peter? To the best of our knowledge, he was persecuted in Rome and killed in Rome. He paid for it with his life. Now, a lot of Christians are fascinated with books and theories about the end times. Have you been reading books about the end times or seeing movies about how Bible prophecy and how the world is going to end? It is amazing how much time and energy people will invest in Bible prophecy. Why? Or a lot of versions of Bible prophecy. Why? Because we want to know how's it going to end. Well, I've got to tell you that a whole lot of people in these studies misunderstand the Bible completely. The Bible isn't telling us how things end. The Bible doesn't wrap it up for us. The Bible does not give away the ending. The Bible does what Jesus did. He comes to us and he says, okay, I'm back. I'm alive. Now, what are you going to do about it? What Jesus said to them, he says to us today. I'm not going to give you the ending. I'm not going to lay it out in Bible prophecy. Somebody made that up. I'm going to give it over to you and see what you do with it. I'm back. I'm alive. What are you going to do? Now you take this as the message of the resurrection. We celebrated last Sunday, and we do every time we are together. It is simply this. It ain't over until the Almighty says it's over. And in the resurrection, the story continues. And just like this sermon continues, not just here in church on Sunday morning, but in your life, the rest of your life, however long that is, God isn't done with you yet. And you aren't done with God yet. This isn't the last chapter, it's the first. Yeah, there's still trouble in the church. There are still struggles in the world. There are still people in pain, and death still stalks us. And yet we have the future. And we know that the future belongs to God. What are you laughing at? Oh, come on, preacher, get back in there. Don't do this to us. You're making me nervous. Come on, man. Get in here and wrap it up for us in a nice, neat little bundle and send us on our way. Hey, come on. How else could I end a message like that, huh? Is it over?